Hey, Smiley.
Boat.
We'll pick up the countdown shortly here. In H-minus 10 seconds, the countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you a step farther out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society.
Our scripture for the week comes from the Reverend Onan Canabite of the Church of the Subgenius. Still your best value in mail order mind control UFO cults. Eternal salvation or triple your money back. Reverend Onan Canobite says, how about we stop funding problems here on Earth and go explore space? How about that? This was on Mastodon the other day. Context was he was talking about growing up during the Vietnam War and how, yeah, the Apollo program was real expensive, but it wasn't a patch on the cost of the Vietnam War, which just involved going around and killing a bunch of people and blowing a bunch of stuff up, which anybody who says, well, we've got to solve all the problems here on Earth before we go out into space, how about we just stop making new ones? Right? How about we take all that money and all that effort that we're putting into making the world an objectively worse place and use that instead to go into space? Right? We don't need to say, oh, well, we should take all that money that's going into space and use it to make the world a better place. No, just stop spending money on making the Earth a worse place to live for everybody, okay? If that's not a program you can get behind, then I don't know what your deal is, all right? But I don't want any of it. Please deal me out. You know, that I think is a perfectly good response, and I'm going to use it from now on. Anytime anybody says, well, you've got so many problems here on Earth, I'm going to say, well, how about we take all the money and effort and manpower that's going into making new ones and use that instead to go into space. I don't know. What can you do? What can you say when the world is in a state as messed up as it is? You know, we've got to make the world a better place. And by world, I mean the human world, right? That set of places and states of being that human beings interact with on a regular basis, which is, as we have seen, not necessarily confined to the Earth's biosphere, because we humans have found ways of getting around that, which is pretty nifty if you ask me. But of course, there are many people who can't seem to agree on what a better place might look like, might be. That's one of the advantages of the O'Neill future, the idea that we can construct space colonies which are fairly isolated from one another and don't necessarily have to interact with one another if they don't want to, and can be spaced well apart, right? Here on Earth, we've had a lot of utopian movements The United States in the middle of the 19th century was utterly full of utopian communities of one kind or another, where people, based on a religious revelation or a philosophical idea or the ravings of some crackpot or something indistinguishable from all of the above, thought they would set up a community and they'd found the one great way to live that would solve all of human problems, and they would set up a community and live that specific way. But, of course, they had to interact with the world around them. And whether you're the Oneida community or the Mormons in Nauvoo, that causes problems. So the O'Neill concept, to a certain extent, does make possible a kind of dispersive democracy where, you know, if somebody really wants to practice Stalinism, they can practice Stalinism, and nobody else has to go anywhere near them. Now, I suspect that a community that was founded on the practice of Stalinism, even by truly committed Stalinists, would implode after a few years, but I don't know. It's, you know, it's worth giving people the choice, right? If the, you know, you've got one group of people who doesn't like anybody else, they can go over and, you know, they can have their own place where they can sit around and not have to interact with all the rest of us who are clearly bad. I mean, it's very depressing sometimes. To live in a world where there are clearly people who think that whatever makes them feel comfortable is worth blowing other people up. See, the thing is, it's important to me, right? I don't want Vladimir Putin to feel unhappy and hemmed in by people around him and not in control of his own life any more than I want anyone else to feel like that, right? It's just the degree to which I don't want him to feel that way is much eclipsed by the degree to which I don't want people in Ukraine being blown up. You know, I mean, I don't know. As I've already said on this program, and so it's not a revelation, that I am considered to be an autistic person, right? And according to all the, you know, the DSM and all the textbook descriptions of that, this means that I have a harder time relating to people, although not quite in the same way as a sociopath. Whatever, right? Plain fact is, I have had to think about what it means to live as a human being, which most people never really do, just because I sort of have to fake it every day, right? If I'm going to interact with people, I have to have some expectation of what that interaction is going to be like. And so I have to do a thing which is a little like the exercises of classical philosophy. Right. I'm not saying that Socrates was an autistic person, although that is certainly one interpretation. But the sort of thing he encouraged people to do is not very dissimilar from the sort of thing that I've just sort of had to do in order to get by in the world. And so maybe I don't have an innate feeling for other people, but I've reasoned myself around to the position that other people's needs, right, their physical needs, their emotional needs, other people's being is as valid as mine. I'm willing to accept that. And what really boggles me is that all these people who don't have this handicap that I supposedly have, this inability to relate to people on a fundamental level or whatever they're claiming it is this week. Right. Haven't got to that point. The people for whom empathy and understanding others and relating to others is supposed to be easy, automatic, reflexive, haven't got to that point. And you know, friends, that worries me enormously. You know, because I've had a long time to look at myself, right, and to say, well, I shouldn't go out there and say, I'm better than all these people. Well, there are days when I really want to, right, when I want to get out Subgenius pamphlet number one, the one that says, do people think you're strange? Do you? Then you might be on the right track. I swear this program is not the Subgenius Radio Ministries Hour of Slack. Firstly, it's only half an hour. But I did grow up listening to Ivan Stang on the Hour of Slack, coming out of KNON in Dallas. And his dear friends has always been an important, you know, it's one of the models for my sort of public speaking persona, which is perhaps a bit strange, but, you know, I just, an hour or so ago, watched a video of Anton LaVey, you know, in his black robe, in his shaved head, and his, you know, goatee and mustache, with his great big organ manual, playing the Big Top medley. So, where was I going with this? I guess people just need to take themselves a little less seriously. Yeah, okay, yeah, that was where I was going with this. The world would be a better place if people would take themselves a little less seriously. Because if you don't take yourself completely seriously, you're much less likely to think, well, this offends me, and so I should just start killing people. Like, and not even killing them yourself, but telling other people, you know, moving hundreds of thousands of people around and, you know, telling other people, well, you should drop bombs on this hospital. You should drop bombs on this primary school. You should drop bombs on this theater, right? And equally, maybe if people took themselves a little less seriously, if somebody said, you should drop a bomb on this primary school, they would just look at that person and say, fuck off! I try to avoid vulgarity on this show, but really, somebody puts a gun in your hand and says, I want you to shoot that little old lady. Why? Well, because she's the enemy. Enemy of what? Somebody puts you in the cockpit of an airplane and says, your mission is to go drop a bomb on a primary school. What has to be going on in a person's mind that they do what they're told? Oh, man. So, yes, I've wasted about half of the showtime being very philosophical here, I guess. But, looking at Calm here and, Tobe is basically enraged by the kind of people who think they're normal and that this entitles them to write the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychological Disorders or Mental Disorders or whatever the hell they're calling it this week. And I can't say that he's wrong to be enraged. I mean, look, I'm not saying that people like me never have conflicts with each other. Of course we do, right? Because we don't all have the same worldview. We don't all start from the same assumptions. We don't all start from the same facts, because that's the nature of living in the world, that the facts you have access to are never the complete picture. Right. And so, of course, we have conflicts, but are we more or less likely to end in organized violence? Because this is the question, I think, that stands before the world today. It's not simply a matter of violence, right? Human beings have a certain tendency to violence, and we may not be able to do much about that, but it's the matter of organized violence, where people don't stop and say, wait, that sounds dumb, because it really does, right? Again, this has been the way that I make my way through life, okay? Talking about energy policy, one of my perennial hobby horses. A long, long time ago, well, I say that, it might have been 20 years ago or more, I started saying, well, what if businesses actually told you what they really do, right? What if ExxonMobil, Chevron, Texaco, Total, whatever it is this week, you know, giant oil company, you know, they say, we provide energy. You know, they don't say is, we suck black gunk up out of the ground through a straw, and then we sell it to people so they can set it on fire. You know, this whole business of setting things on fire for energy. Fundamentally, one of the primary reasons why I'm an advocate for nuclear energy is that I've always found setting things on fire to be wasteful and inelegant. You know, if I've got a choice between setting a great big pile of wood or coal on fire in order to keep me warm and using up a piece of uranium barely visible to the naked eye, I'm going to take the one that involves the barely visible to the naked eye. And I don't know why anyone wouldn't. Tobe says, are you blaspheming against fire? No, 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 Tobe. It's not that. You know, I would not for a moment blaspheme against the great Ahura Mazda and the sacrament of fire. I simply want the highest quality fire I can get. Right. I mean, it's like my sibling who was encountered by some Baptist proselytizers who were saying, you should come to our church. Passed them a packet of matches from a bar and says, I'm a Zoroastrian. I worship fire. You should come to mine. That kid is so good at snappy comebacks. But, so yeah, this is one of those more rambling and diffuse shows in which I, you know, have, this is more of a feelings show than a thoughts show, I'm afraid, today, and that's not my normal MO. You know, I'm very much an intellectual person. I like to talk about facts and thoughts and principles, but there are days when I just get completely disgusted. But if you want some figures and facts, so I was talking yesterday on the phone to a graduate student from New York University who had emailed me out of the blue, wants to interview me for some kind of a podcast project, and was asking me about space settlement and nuclear energy and what I feel is the confluence of them, things like that. And, you know, I was saying what I've been saying for a number of years now, that the initial lunar settlement, in other words, you've got to have a minimum of two people because you absolutely have to have the buddy system when you're working on the surface in pea suits. That is a requirement. Rather have three, but two is the minimum. Put them on the lunar surface with something that's adequate to protect them from solar flares and cosmic radiation, Right, a shelter, enough supplies of food, water, and air to last for 6 months with no recycling, plus pilot plants for recycling water and air, pilot plants for, you know, or just desktop or benchtop scale experiments for making water, air, useful metals, cast basalt, useful things from lunar resources. You know, benchtop scale experiments for growing food and things like that, which would take that 6 months of supplies and stretch it considerably, assuming it all works. And if it doesn't work, well, that's what the people are there for, right, is to test it, tinker with it, check the results, and if it really doesn't work, tell the people back on Earth this is just not workable. And if it does work, tell the people back on Earth, well, the next time you send us something, send us a much bigger one of these and we'll use it. And so on, all this kind of thing, right? That initial step could be done for under $1 billion. A great deal of that has to do with the SpaceX Falcon Heavy. A great deal of it has to do with other parts of the necessary work that are already finished. But I don't have to wait for the SpaceX Starship, okay? This is stuff that could be done. Basically, when I say I want $1 billion, what I'm saying is I'm reasonably confident that all this stuff could be done within 18 months. 18 months is a pretty reasonable figure, because most of this is integrating things that already exist, for $1 billion, roughly. I mean, obviously, it depends on things like how long ULA would require, right, how long ULA would require to adapt the Centaur stage for the purposes I need it, right. But the thing is, these are not new things I'm asking them to do. These are things they've already developed in-house or under contract to NASA or somebody and just haven't deployed. But, and I really believe that one of the things the world needs today is hope, right? Because I look around me, and what do I see? On the small scale up to the global scale, an animal caught in a trap will try to gnaw its own leg off in order to escape. And humans are that kind of animal. You know, there was a movie they made a few years back about this idiot hiker who fell into a crevasse and in order to escape had to cut his own leg off with a pocket knife, a process which took him like 4 days of incredible agony and hard work, which must have been made doubly difficult, you know, by the pain and the losing fluids and the being trapped in a crevasse. Anyway, but I look around me at society, and what I see looks like people and societies who feel as though they're caught in a trap. And so they're engaging in self-destructive behaviors in an attempt to alleviate that feeling of being trapped. And so, even a few people leaving the Earth permanently, right, setting up another spot of human habitation somewhere else in the cosmos, that provides an enormous feeling of hope and relief. The lid may not be completely taken off, but at least there's a little hole punched in it. That I'm not talking about moving people 100 million at a time to Jupiter to alleviate the population problem or whatever you might come up with. No. I mean, Heinlein in Farmer in the Sky back in the 40s pointed out that that was not a reasonable idea, right? I know people who kind of do want to do that, but it's a long ways out, practically speaking. And that's, you know, that's not the way I look at things necessarily. In the near term, what we have to do is make people realize that, yes, there are other ways. And the best demonstration, I think, the best demonstration of that is to get off the Earth, because I really think that, you know, quite putting aside the issue of technological spin-offs, for example, the obvious fact that if you're building large, closed environment habitats, which basically have to be managed ecosystems in miniature, right, you're going to learn a lot about ecological dynamics, which could very much help to deal with some of the problems we're encountering here on Earth, right? Aside from the possibility that we can curtail some of the more destructive mining operations on Earth by bringing in platinum from the asteroids or what have you, right? Completely putting aside those aspects of the problem, I honestly believe that space settlement, if done in the right way, and again, I have to emphasize, if done in the right way, right? We cannot allow people like Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk to control space settlement. Because after all, you think about it, Amazon, right? Jeff Bezos, Amazon, the surveillance state in miniature, where people who work for Amazon are tracked every moment and can't even take bathroom breaks because it's not productive, not treated as human beings. No. Space settlement has to be a human endeavor, first and foremost. And so we do have to get out from under the people who feel as though they have a right to tell us how we should live, how we should be. This has to be our own selves. This has to be our own thing. I don't know. But yeah, that's what I believe, is that if we do space settlement and we do it in the right way, in a bottom-up way, which is what I've been advocating for this whole time. It's been 15 years now that I've been going out on the road, right, going to anime conventions and science fiction conventions and appearing in films and television and on radio, right, just to say, those of us who actually care about this need to be the ones who do it, because we cannot leave it to the financiers, we cannot leave it to the governments, because they're unlikely to do anything constructive about it, and if they do, the results are not going to be what we want. We have to show, right, we have to get out in front and show the world that humans are both capable and willing to embody and put into practice the best of what we are capable of, rather than the worst. Because we see this, right? Military glory, right? People look at heroism and they look at soldiers. Well, again, who are soldiers? Soldiers are doing something that nobody should be doing, right? Soldier, by definition, is somebody who has no will of his own. He's completely under command of someone who tells him to go out and brutalize other people. What's glorious in that? What's wonderful? It is, if anything, right, one of those things which is occasionally an unpleasant necessity. But there's nothing positive in it whatsoever. The heroes are the people who are making it possible for us to live in a more human manner. And we have to be those people. I think that we do have the chance to be those people. You know, there are the tools, and of course, space travel, atomic energy, genetic engineering, all these things are tools. The tools require the will to use them and the motivation to to use them and self-awareness to use them in the right way, because if used in the wrong way, they're destructive. Anyway, you can send your cards and letters to Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas, 76101, United States of America. I look forward to hearing from you. And up next is Toad with the Dubious Goals Committee.
7.